is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
North Korea and Russia today here in the 21st century requires a little history. Once upon a time, Kim Il-sung, the man who inherited North Korea from the chaos of the end of the Second War and the withdrawal flight of the Imperial Japanese Army that had dominated the Korean Peninsula for most of the century at that point, 1945, Kim Il-sung took over a shattered economy, North and South. Many years later, Kim Il-sung wanted to unite the Korean Peninsula. This is the grandfather of Kim Jong-un, the present dictator, the Kim family. He applied to, through representatives of the then Soviet Union, now Russia, he applied to the representative in Pyongyang to ask Marshal Stalin for weapons and support for reuniting the Korean Peninsula. The report is, in a new book by Nick Bunker, In the Shadow of Fear, the period 49 to 50, Stalin said, no, absolutely not. You're not going to cause problems for me. I have other ambitions. The ambitions were the People's Republic of China, because Mao was then in Moscow and looking for a Sino-Soviet treaty. Some weeks went by, and in the United States, Dean Acheson, then the Secretary of State, very powerful man, very well prepared for Harry Truman, who had inherited the presidency from the deceased FDR. Dean Acheson gave a speech at the Press Club in Washington. And in it, he presented the American sphere of influence in the Indo-Pacific. All eyes were on Europe, of course, because of the Marshall Plan. And there was a NATO treaty that wasn't staffed or armed yet, but a treaty did exist. In the Indo-Pacific, it was another matter. And Dean Acheson, who had not been to Asia and didn't know Asia, had hired Columbia professors and other executives to help him with the story, said our sphere of influence. He looked at the map, and he started with Guam. He went through Japan, the Philippines, down to Australia, leaving out Taiwan and the Korean Peninsula. Did he mean to leave it out? We won't defend it? No, subsequent analysis, he didn't leave it out so much as he was talking about a sphere of influence, not reaching into Taiwan, where Chiang Kai-shek was a challenge to Acheson, not reaching into the Korean Peninsula, where Syngman Rhee was a challenge to Acheson. Neither Chiang nor Rhee practiced what America found at the time to be acceptable democracy. This translated into the defeat of the Korean aid bill before the U.S. Congress later that month, January of 1950. And then Stalin changed his mind, seeing that the Americans, based entirely in Japan, were not going to invest Taiwan, were not going to invest Korea. And therefore, he told Kim Il-sung, go ahead, I'll send you the arms and a Russian general to help you. That's the beginning of the story. I come now to Ekaterina Zolotova, an analyst at Geopolitical Futures, writing about the 2024 version of the relationship between Moscow and Pyongyang. But as Ekaterina reminds me, we have to begin in the 1990s when Boris Yeltsin was the president of the Russian Federation. Ekaterina, beg my storytelling, but we go immediately to the 90s. We put the 50s behind us. What was the relationship, as you understand it, between Yeltsin and Kim Il-sung, who died, and his son, and then his grandson eventually? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Well, it's a very interesting topic. And in fact, the relations between Russia and North Korea were not very good at that time. Russia again changed its mind, if we could say like this. And the 90s characterized by minimal contacts between Russia and North Korea. There were several reasons for this. First of all, Russia itself was trying to understand its own place in the world. There was a credit from IMF. There were attempts by Russia to create new trade relations with different countries, and there was no desire to antagonize Japan, the United States at that period of time. And at the same time, North Korea was not in the position to help Russia with any finance with any finance, for example, or continue to buy Russian weaponry that the Soviet Union previously was delivering to the North Korea. And at that point, the relations really, they were not very impressive. They even, the contacts were really, really minimal, but it lasted till 2000s. At that time, when the president, the current president, Vladimir Putin, is coming to the power, and Russia started to revive from the crisis after the collapse of the Soviet Union, partly because of the export and gathering money from the oil sales, partly because of different investment flows that were coming to Russia. So that's a little bit another story. But anyhow, at that time, Russia started to follow its major imperative to return its regional power, its status of the global power, and of course, keeping the relations and creating new relations with North Korea as the area that is quite close to the Russian territory. It became very important for Russia at that time. First of all, there were two major needs. Of course, it was not the period of Cold War anymore, so there was no focus on the cooperation with North Korea as the Cold War issue. But at that time, Russia was thinking about its own borders, first of all. And one of the major tasks, and by the way, this idea Russia still has, is to protect its own borders from any threat. Of course, Russia didn't consider that North Korea will attack Russia. No, of course not. But Russia was very aware of any potential conflict that could appear in Korea, which could, for example, cause the migration flow to Russia or anything else. And of course, Russia was very aware of the potential economic collapse in case of hunger and so on. Because of this, because Russia didn't want to see this area very unstable for its own purpose, to protect its own borders, first of all, Russia started to create the new relations with North Korea, but they were quite limited in spheres. First of all, the major part of relations between Russia and North Korea were devoted to the trade, and very limited trade. It was mostly agriculture, and still one of the major item of Russian export to North Korea is agriculture, like wheat and live animals, for example.
The puzzle that we have now today is about military matters, and the reporting that you do indicates that the arsenal in Pyongyang is based upon Russian equipment from probably the 1950s. Is that still the case? Are all of these weapon systems compatible?
Yes, it's still the case. Of course, North Korea were buying weapons also from China, but the basics of the North Korea power was built in the 50s, in the 60s. And at that time, the Soviet Union was one of the major suppliers of weapons to North Korea. Right now, this is exactly the issue, because North Korea would like to see new technology, or North Korea would like to see new equipment. And while it has some knowledge how to operate with the Soviet systems, Russia looks like a very good partner who could help to construct and to modernize its military system. Russian side is pointing out to the visit of Kim to Russia in September, if I'm not mistaken, last year. He was visiting the Vostochny, and he was visiting a lot of places connected with military sector. This is one point, of course, of the relations. But for me, one of the most interesting topic right now that is raised by a lot of media eats the North Korean supplies to Russia, not from Russia, but opposite to Russia. Talking about this question, there are a lot of constraints and there are a lot of things that we should consider before making any conclusions on supplies of the weapons from North Korea to Russia.
North Korea and Russia are neighbors. There is a corridor that makes it possible to entrain in Pyongyang and arrive in Moscow, and to do that not needing to cross China's territory. Is that important to Russia?
Of course it's important when Russia has the direct access to different countries, such as North Korea as well. Of course, it's easy to organize the trade operations and other communication when you have the common border. But when we talk about Russia and North Korea in this case, there is one small issue, is that despite these countries share the borders, there is a lack of infrastructure. There is the bridge, but this bridge was closed during the COVID, for example, and there were a lot of projects discussed between Russia and North Korea, especially about the construction of railway road. But here the major question is who is going to construct it and who is going to invest into this. North Korea, it's not the major partner of Russia. I would say it's even not the medium partner of Russia. Less than 1% of Russian exports and imports go to Korea. For North Korea, Russia is also not the major partner. So to invest a lot of money into some logistical projects that will not create a lot of benefits for the economy, it's a quite risky event. Plus, no Russian, neither North Korea, they don't have enough finance to invest into these long-term projects like logistical railways and the new roads. And Russia doesn't want to participate in this alone, of course. And right now it's busy with other things like support of its own economy, the situation in Ukraine, and many other things that Russia has to consider.
Ekaterina Zolotova is an analyst for Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site I completely recommend. She is in Moscow, and when we come back, there is the matter of labor. North Korea has lots of laborers. They're very good at digging tunnels, for example, and building things. Are they desirable for Russia that is very low on manpower, given all of its industries that's running 24/7 to support the front? This is CBSi on the World. I'm John Batchelor.